Our apologies for going over in closed session, but we had a heavy agenda in there tonight. So first of all, I'll check to see if anyone has any public comment on closed session topics. Seeing none, here we go. So we just completed meeting in closed session with regard to disciplinary, an employee disciplinary issue, and conference with labor negotiators. And with regard to closed session, during closed session, upon a motion made by board member Walt Millar and seconded by board member Jim Quesenberry, the board approved the superintendent's recommendation pursuant to Personnel Commission Rule 10.1 to implement a two-day suspension without pay for classified employee number 24724 by a roll call vote of 6 ayes and 1 absence. So we will now proceed to open session. Do we have a consensus on the order of business? Everyone okay? All right, thank you. Approval of minutes from March 17, 2015. All right. Any changes, revisions, comments? Hearing none. All in favor of the approving the March 17, 2015 minutes?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Motion is unanimous. And then approval of the minutes from March 20th, 2015, that was our study session, our Measure D study session. Second? Okay. Any discussion, revisions, changes to those minutes? All right. All in favor? All right. Opposed? And one abstention. Ms. Chris Unger. Okay. And now, Jono. Mr. Millar, Jono has a job to do here that we look forward to. All right, you're on.
All right, hello everybody. I'd like to open up by giving my apologies for not being here at the last meeting. We were celebrating my father's 25-year pin at Cal Poly, so I couldn't arrange for someone else to come replace me. So my apologies, I'm here now. I've got double the amount of things, which I'm sure you're all happy to hear about, just to make up for the time that we've lost together. So I'd like to open up by saying we've got our spring sports in full swing. We almost have 400 of our students as athletes this trimester. So we've got some of the bigger sports like track going on and swim, which include a wider population than some of the other sports, such as golf. And we have our boys' tennis team, which is first in league and has gone undefeated the entire season so far, and they're fifth in CIF. And our boys' track is looking for what they're calling a three-peat and winning league for the third time 3 years in a row. And our FFA won the Outstanding Chapter Award on Sunday with the advisor, Mrs. Bates, winning the Star Advisor Award. Our Iambic Pentameter Club just put on their performance of The Tempest, which I was unable to make due to setting up for the dance, but I heard it was awesome. Shakespeare would have stood up and clapped. We also have our Skills USA teams, our wood shop, our metal, and our tech all going to San Diego for the state tournament this weekend, so we're going to be wishing them good luck. And in ASB news, we had Slowcella, which was the name of our spring dance. It hadn't been that big of a success the past couple of years. We started to move it outside. People liked it, but then the location didn't work out so well. So our current activities activities commissioner, Lauren McGregor, decided that she wasn't going to have any of that, and she was going to completely revamp it. So she moved it down onto the field, or the practice field, and had face painting. She had hot dogs for people, both vegetarian and meat. She had a bubble machine going on, a completely new DJ, not based from out of town, but from San Luis. She also had this gazebo that the ASB students built for students who wanted to take a break from dancing. They could go and sit in the lounge area. And it was very hot the day we were setting up. And I don't know if my neck is still sunburnt from it, but it's a little red. So it wasn't that pleasing. But when I got there at the dance that night, it was, you can quote me on this, 12 out of 10, the best dance I've ever been to. Some people were a little concerned by some of the choices that the DJ made, but I thought they were all awesome because they were all the hits from when I was growing up, the early 2000s. So most people were looking for something that's, some Sesame Street, you know, all of that, Blue's Clues. No, but some of the stuff I hadn't heard since accidentally turning on Wild 106 when I was like 3. So it was awesome to dance to that as a senior, and I had the night of a lifetime. It was awesome. We had over 300 people attend, which we had around 100 couples attending the years before, which shows you how just the location in general completely changed how people viewed it. We were done by 10:30. The music was awesome. Everybody had such a great time. I was super proud of Lauren. She did a great job with that. We also had ping pong and cornhole and all that kind of stuff. So people they're looking forward to next year. So I'm glad we were able to start a tradition. We also had our mock rock, which was before you guys met last week. So I'm sorry I didn't get to inform you about it then. But it was super awesome. We usually didn't have many people attend because it had just dwindled down over the years. But again, our activities commissioner, the other one, Maria Nakamura, brought it up. We had around 300 people, both parents and students, attend after school. And we had 19 acts, the winners for Mock Rock being Max Tiford performing Nicki Minaj's Super Bass. And we had, for the talent, a band whose name is escaping me. Remind you, this was a couple weeks ago. I'm a very busy man. That was a bad excuse. But they knocked it out of the park. They had a full band going on, saxophone, bass, drums, keyboards. I was grooving along with them in my seat. I was told to sit down when I stood up. And we today have finally announced our new executive council for ASB. For 2015, the ASB president will be Bella Stenvall. The vice president will be Max Tiford, that winner of Super Bass. The treasurer will be Nathan Kaplan, and the secretary will be Nate Higgins. The secretary is actually going to be a sophomore next year, which shows how willing he was to get onto the executive council. It'll be good to get a younger opinion on this. And so, almost done here. Sorry, guys, but I have one thing I want to let you guys know is that the Friday before, it was the UN acknowledged International Happiness Day, promoting happiness all around the world. And one of our students brought it to us a couple days before the day, saying, well, we should do something about it. And people were like, oh, yeah, that's a great idea. And next thing you know, we have KSBY out there in the morning. And they have recorded. We had a high five tunnel, stickers handing out to everybody. We had a big sign that said happiness where people could put their handprints on it. We had a bunch of music going on. It's not unusual. That's the name of the song. I don't remember who it's by, but I know it's the one that you dance like this. Tom Jones, that's it. I have the video for you guys today that KSBY filmed. For those of you who remember Eli, who comes with me every now and then, he was interviewed first, and then they interviewed me, but they didn't show any of his interview. He was a little mad about that. But this should be it.
Students at San Luis Obispo High School took some time to recognize World Happiness Day today. It was put on by the school's ASB as a way to celebrate the international holiday. It's a day of fun and happiness and included stickers handed out to students, bubbles, and a high-five train for students when they arrived at school this morning.
It's hard to find a good amount of people smiling at 8 o'clock in the morning, especially when they have to go to their class. Some of them math, you know, that's not something most people want to do first thing they wake up, but there are smiles on everybody's faces.
The holiday was created by the United Nations as a way of bringing people together from all over the world.
I know it's hard to believe, but that young, handsome man that they were interviewing was, in fact, me. I've let my hair grown out since then, so I don't know if you could tell. But that was one of my favorite events that we've done all year. Everybody was super excited. I mean, you can see them coming from the parking lot, seeing all these kids in yellow T-shirts, and going, oh, no, what's going on now? But when you find out, they're like, hey, just give me a high five. Here's a sticker. They're like, hey, all right. I can do this. I can do with a sticker and a high five any day. So it was awesome to see everybody just being so happy, and just everybody was saying, I know a couple people came back and told me, I've been hearing everybody walk around saying, I love my school, you know, this is so awesome. Do you know of any other schools that do this? No. Have you been to any other schools? No. So, but regardless, I'm glad that we're building this culture on the campus, and it's one of my favorite legacies that I'll be happy to leave the school with.
Thank you, Jono. You took me back in iambic pentameter to when my kids were involved in Queen Lear, which was quite an interesting new approach to the play that worked very well. And we're happy anytime you're with us. So thank you very much.
You're irreplaceable.
Thanks. Thanks for your report, as usual. Should you have homework pulling you away, we understand, or you're, of course, welcome to stay. What's your excuse this time?
Well, actually, I've currently got that third trimester senior schedule, so I don't really have any homework, per se, unless it means getting ready for yoga cycling, which I don't think should be much of a problem. All I have to do is put my yoga pants into my backpack and get ready. But I know that there's some discussion about my alma mater, Pacheco, going on, and I wanted to stay and
keep up on that.
We
always look forward to having you with us. All right, this is the time when we open it up to public comment for items not on the agenda or items on the agenda that you don't wish to stay for. Okay, we'll do it backwards. Anyone wishing to address the board for public comment at this time? Okay, seeing none. I'll also report with regard to correspondence that we all received an email from Betty Winholtz yesterday, I believe. So that's our only item of correspondence that came to the entire board that I'm aware of. It is time for superintendent's updates, starting with business and budget. Mr. Pinkerton, I see your light on.
Yeah, so we're, as we've talked before, Julie Lang and myself are beginning to, you know, kind of open the budget for next year, looking at 15-16. We'll beginning the process of closing the books as well next month, as all the POs, you know, basically they have to be in and go through that process. So we'll be, as we go through the LCAP and budget, they'll correspond, you know, throughout the entire time. In terms of the economy, things are still looking good. State of California, tax revenues, and though that does, again, it doesn't affect us in terms of our base amount, there is the potential that the amount that we receive in the potential of one-time costs, because the state still owes us for our mandated cost funds. So that's something that they still banter about, that could grow, it could be more, as the governor, if they do have extra money, would like to give it in one-time payments instead of ongoing amounts. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes. Both Julie and I are both signed up for the School Services May Revise meeting for May 15th as well. It was interesting, another school service article also talked about, they did a poll of constituents throughout the state of California about the Prop 30 taxes and whether people would be willing to extend those property taxes. For us, in 18-19, it's about a loss of $1.4 million ongoing, as you know, in terms of looking at the seven-year budget. So it was kind of a 50-50 in terms of public perception about extending those property taxes and the tax base. And what they did say from the survey results was that people, if they are going to do it, instead of having the legislature do it, they would like it to be another vote, that people would get the opportunity to vote should they want to extend those. So we'll see how that goes over the years as that comes to fruition. And then lastly, I met with constituents from all of the union groups, and we got together and looked at our health care benefits for next year and looked at trying to find any way that we could in terms of keeping the overall cost for plans from going up substantially. And so we did do two things. We looked at the pharmacy amount for both the 90 and 100% plans, and by taking them from the $5, $9 general, we're able to keep the overall cost of the plans for basically those two plans anyways from having substantial increases. I think it was only like $10 more a month versus the 60 more a month per employee that we've been seeing in the past over the last few years. And again, any savings that we receive in those health talks basically both benefits the district, because the district pays part of the contribution, as well as the employee. So it's kind of a win-win for the employee as well as the overall budget. So the entire group really wanted to get together over the course of next year, 15-16, and just look at healthcare benefits, plans, things that we can do, and really kind of work together on that. As we know, the projection for benefits costs just continue to escalate over the next 6 years. So we'll be working on that.
Thank you. Any public comment with regard to Mr. Pinkerton's report? Any discussion, questions by the board? All right. Mr. Robinette, Educational Services.
Yeah, update. Just a couple of little quick announcements. I don't want to take anything away from a later board report, but I was privileged to be a judge at Teach Elementary School's Innovation and Exploration Initiative awards, and it was fantastic. I mean, it was one great example of Common Core at work. Students had to come up with inventions that solved real problems, but what was so impressive was the marketing of these, the presentation about the inventions, the collaboration that went into it. So a real privilege, and they were all winners, so it was easy to judge. I also, just another quickie announcement, I found out just today that our own Erin Lunds, who will be leaving us in June, as you know, she's done many board reports for us as our secondary teacher on special assignment. She is now going to become the writing assessment coordinator for the entire state of Nebraska, which might be about the size of our district, I think. But no, I just gave her a hard time about that. But anyway, she has a state position. It's a great position for her, and we're going to miss her. But we have what I really wanted to share with you is we have, as the board is aware, as I've made you aware in some Friday notes, we are at an interesting turning point in our early literacy intervention programs. Reading Recovery, which was the first thing I was introduced to when I came to this district 21 years ago, has been a highly successful, albeit very expensive, program in place in our district for over two decades. And we have made significant cuts in the number of students served twice over the last 10 years, as the board knows. We've cut this program back, dealing with the personnel costs and the fact that one-on-one instruction is very expensive. We've spent a great deal of time looking at other powerful interventions that don't have the same requirements as Reading Recovery in terms of level of training, oversight, personnel costs. And we feel like we've had some good success with LLI as just one of those programs, which we shared with the board last week. Reading Recovery requires a trained teacher leader that is full-time to coordinate the program. It's part of the licensing and agreement to actually use the program with fidelity. Mary Zerm, who is our Reading Recovery teacher leader and trainer, has asked to reduce her work schedule as part of the reduced work pre-retirement program to 60%, and it puts us in a bit of a bind. The expense of either acquiring a new teacher leader or training our own, which is the model we have used with Wayne Brown and also then again with Mary Zerm, really at this point would involve sending a teacher to a two-year master's program out of state, paying for all those expenses and salaries, and it just seemed fairly onerous right now. So as part of our LCAP, and so this is not a discussion item tonight, obviously it's just a report, but I want to give you lots of running room, we will likely be coming to the board and making a recommendation to phase out reading recovery as an intervention over the next 2 years and beef up our commitment to LLI and perhaps other less costly research-based reading interventions. We believe Mary's expertise as an employer over the next 2 years will be best utilizing in transitioning us to a new program. It will not be an easy recommendation to make, but we just want to give the board all the information so that you can decide it, and it's important to make sure that you and the public are aware of the possibility over the next 2 years with a really foundational program in our district. So with that, just the only other thing I will say is we have completed our LCAP outreach going. Our next step is analyzing all those survey results and opinions and trying to figure out where, you know, we see some consensus. On April 21st at that board meeting, we will give the board kind of those broad strokes of what we've learned. In the May meetings, we will present our plan with revisions over those two meetings in May. It will probably look very similar because, of course, the LCAP is a three-year plan, and we are in year one of the implementation, so we're not changing the whole thing. But we do expect some tweaks, and we will highlight those that evening. And that concludes my report.
Anyone from the public wishing to comment on this report? Seeing none, Mr. Buckman.
Rick, I don't know where you are in terms of the paperwork and the gathering of all the notes and everything, but if it's in some kind of format that we could get, I as one board member, or others want it, I could get just to look at, just to get a sense of where we are.
Yeah, the survey closes on Thursday, and so we will then open that up at that point and send it to you.
Thank you.
Yeah. And go ahead, Ryan.
You can actually currently now go to the LCAP page and see all of the feedback from all the school sites. Yeah, so that information is currently on our LCAP webpage, and we've been updating that as we've gone to school sites and again, ask the three questions: what are we doing well, what would you like to see more of, and what are things that we could possibly reduce so that we could do those things we want to do more of, kind of the three keys. And then we did one last kind of big survey push, actually sent it out on Monday and doubled our survey responses in a day, so that was great. It was good to kind of get people's attention. Hey, please do this. My goal was to close that off and then send those results to the board, and then we'll also post them on the website. And that's an anonymous survey with staff.
Very good. Anyone else? All right. Item 7.03, Measure D update.
Yeah, so just quickly for the board, for our next study session, kind of the three topics that came up out of our last study session was really zeroing in on construction management so that we can begin to make some decisions towards, you know, what moving forward with that. We actually went to the PC at the last meeting, Mr. Palazzo and myself, kind of talked about the potential of the three different types and the different types of positions with them, and so they were pleased to kind of get an update of where we were at. I'd like to, again, further update the board on the Morro Bay High School planning design that's going on, as well as the Slo High School design that's going on. And then lastly, I thought it would be good for the architects, as well as Steve Stewart, who's lead certified, Anthony Palazzo, to kind of talk to the board about measures that we're going to take to include energy efficiency into our construction and into our new building. So that would be a good topic for the board to discuss and talk about the potential in those areas. So if that sounds good, that'll be kind of our guide for that meeting. That's it.
Thank you. Anyone from the public wishing to speak to this? Okay, Mr. Millar.
Just in general, are we going to be asked to make a overall blanket decision about construction management, or will it be a site or project specific kind of?
So there won't be any board approvals at that study session that we'll be asking of you.
I mean in general, when we get to that decision.
Oh, I would say hopefully that will come maybe the following board meeting after it may have to wait till May, probably the first May board meeting.
Okay, but my question is,
yes,
are we going to be making a global decision about construction management, or are we going to be looking at specific projects, time frames, and then making a a decision about what kind of management we would like to have for those particular projects, if you know at this stage. I hope you do.
I think that's going to be the topic of discussion at the next study session.
Okay, good.
I for the board to give us direction on if you know what you feel comfortable with and how we should proceed.
Mr. Quisenberry.
This is probably for Kim. So that we have put that 17th, April 17th study session back to the afternoon. Is that correct? Yes.
Yeah, we adjusted that one. I believe 1:30 is my recollection.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Two?
Wasn't it 2 o'clock? Yeah, I think it was two.
Okay. All right. Moving on to item 8.01. Proposed 2013-14 through 2015-16 agreement with San Luis Coastal Teachers Association.
This is a public hearing, and so this is the opportunity for the public to come forward and, you know, express any interest in this. And this item appears later on the agenda for action, and I can discuss it at that moment in time.
So this will open the public hearing. Anyone wishing to address the board with regard to this item? We will now close the public hearing and move on to 8.02.
And this is the public hearing for the CSEA proposal that will, the agreement that will occur later in the agenda as well.
Thank you. So we will now open the public hearing with regard to the proposed agreement with California School Employees Association. Anyone wishing to speak to the board on that item? That public hearing is now closed. Resolution number 15-14-15. Who is speaking to that?
So this resolution is basically in order to receive E-rate funds, which in this case for us is a federally subsidized program for us to receive money towards, and for us we're going to go for Wi-Fi equipment at our school sites, and specifically the two high schools. We have to have the board pass a resolution. And again, this is coming from our Infinity, our wireless, what would you call it?
E-rate
advisors, basically, are help or telling us that in terms of to receive the funds, we have to do a competitively bid process and pass a resolution in order to be able to receive those federal funds. So that's what this resolution is about today. So our goal is to, again, and this E-rate program has changed over the course of the years. It used to be for cell phone service. It used to be for getting equipment, those types of things. And now it's really focused on Wi-Fi and moving away from funding cell phones and cell data plans and things like that to actually putting in Wi-Fi implementation. So based on our free and reduced lunch count, we're able to receive, in this case, it looks like about 60%. Towards the purchase of equipment, so a huge discounted savings. And so through that process of hopefully putting Wi-Fi at both of our San Luis Obispo High School and Morro Bay High School, we'll be able to utilize this path through E-rate to be able to get the equipment to be able to get that project accomplished. So that's what this resolution basically does today. It says that we will go out and use a competitively based process to purchase that equipment.
Okay. Is there anyone from the public who would like to address this item? Mrs. Roger, then Mr. Buckman.
Thank you. In conversation between ourselves, Mr. Pinkerton, I came to understand that we have used E-rate for many years, though it was something that I was totally unaware of and didn't know anything about. So, you explained to me kind of about it and how it's based on our percentage of students on free and reduced lunch. And I just don't know if my fellow board members are really familiar with E-rate. If I wasn't, maybe you're not, and we'd all benefit from just the little short course on what it's about.
Yeah, the Cliff Note version is it's a federal program that has allowed for significant discount in long distance bills, cell phone bills, a variety of small pieces that they're either phasing out the help that they have given over the years for that or doing a flash cut. And like Mr. Pinkerton mentioned, they have shifted that funding to completely be about broadband and getting Wi-Fi access into schools. So the good part about that is since we haven't completed our high school Wi-Fi projects, it allows us to apply for the equipment portion is what we're looking to do this time so that we could have a significant discount on that.
So this would allow us to competitively bid the equipment. This is a sort of a precursor step to that.
That's what this resolution is about, is it would allow us, and the consultant firm that we use for E-Rate suggests that we need to do this and have your approval in order to move forward with that process. But E-Rate and how they're funded is almost a separate issue than this.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Buckman.
So I don't know who this will go to, Ryan or Kim, but in the one of the whereases in the resolution, it stopped me for a second. It said, whereas the, and I just may not remember us doing this, whereas following the adoption by the school district's governing board of certain findings, it allows us to go out for a competitive process. Can you remind me what those findings were that allowed us to do this, to go out to competitive process? Did I miss a meeting?
I think through the design process, which is going to be the next item actually on the board agenda, you're going to find out, we're going to know what equipment we need to purchase.
Okay.
So that's going to help lead us towards moving forward in the process of doing a competitive bid.
Okay. And then somewhere else in that agenda item, which I really appreciate, it was really good, was when we go out for bid, we can only go out for bid for items that are not available to the general public.
Can you pull it up for me?
Does that ring a bell?
So I can know what.
Number two.
It's in the resolution.
Item two.
And so. So I'm guessing that means we can't go to Best Buy when this stuff's on sale. Okay, it was a bad joke.
Because we have educational discounts, right? Well, I mean, yeah, in terms of number two, basically it's saying that you can't go out and just buy these things in any everyday store, I think is how I interpret number two.
Okay. So my question is this something like where we would be going with Cisco or IBM, mm-hmm. something, a larger organization?
Right. We would look at doing is we kind of outline the equipment. So you're looking at access points, controllers, servers, switches, mm-hmm. things like that. And we would go out for a bid, and they give educational discounts also for this massive amount of product that you need. And so, right, you can't walk into a store, buy it, and then expect the federal government to give you a discount on that.
So can we just add on the Wi-Fi I need at home?
Sorry about that.
Thank you very much for the answer. I appreciate it.
And in the future, too, you know, though we have Wi-Fi at our sites currently at elementary and middle school, too, you know, we could still add more hubs. We could still add more to those sites to make them even better as we, you know, get more and more machines on our campuses and those types of things. You know, we didn't do our multi-purpose rooms last year in terms of cutting costs. So there will be future E-rate programs that we can go after in terms of getting Wi-Fi. It's just the two high schools right now are probably our biggest need.
Anyone else? All right, then I would entertain a motion with regard to this resolution. Mr. Buckman?
Yeah, I'd be proud to make that motion.
All right. Mr. Quisenberry?
I'll second.
All right. Mrs. Holmes?
Mr. Buckman?
Aye.
Mr. Quisenberry?
Aye.
Mr. Millar?
Aye.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers? Mrs. Sheffer?
Yes.
Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Passes 7-0.
Thanks.
Okay. Next is we're into the discussion items, 10.01, approved 2015 high school Wi-Fi project design phase.
Yeah, so I'm going to start this because we made some changes to this item. And so, Kim, if you can pull it up for me. And I'm going to have Anthony and Kim talk about the actual item, but just so that the board knows. So we worked through Lozano Smith to get the make sure that the template that we used was correct. They did make some adjustments for it. And when we did the exhibit, we put the entire written proposal from TOMA in there when we should have just included the scope of work. So we've gone through. So it's our contract, basically. And then what you'll see for Exhibit A as you go down is that we've taken out the what the TOMA would like to have as part of the agreement and basically just had the scope of work included in Exhibit A. And then basically the contract itself is what the district wants to have. So it's basically it's a district-friendly template and document that they've gone through, made sure that our needs and desires are, you know, substantiated throughout the contract. And basically through the exhibit, what the work is the design for the bid build. And so I'll have Anthony and Kim kind of talk about what that is through it, but I just wanted the board to know that it should have just been the scope of work and not the entire proposal that was there, and thanks to Marilyn for catching that for me.
Good job. Thank you.
All right, so related to this, just a little background, just a reminder where this is coming from. So as you very well remember, we started by implementing Wi-Fi into our middle schools, and it's working great and, you know, functioning beautifully. And then last summer, we were able to put Wi-Fi into elementary schools, which as we thought, it was kind of if you build it, they will come. It really has created a fire and has created really the opportunity for teachers to start to explore how can technology be used to have an instructional impact. So we have our two comprehensive high schools are the two schools that remain that do not have Wi-Fi access. So we started kind of the conversation of what could that look like, and then we had the pleasure of Measure D passing. So it did kind of change our thought process around that, as we obviously wouldn't want to implement a full Wi-Fi project when construction's, you know, in the process of happening. So what we did is we started to explore, could we come up with some different types of plans? We came up with kind of three broad ideas. We went to principals, and from my ISNT side of things, we talked with the principals about, talk to us about where it would be used immediately and who is really hungry for it and waiting to use it, and that we're kind of holding them back because Wi-Fi is not there. And then we looked at, there are some areas that are going to possibly have a lot of construction happen. There's going to be some areas that it might be minimal and some areas that might be virtually untouched. So then we said, what if we looked at having kind of three different types of plans so that we make sure to utilize our money really wisely and not implement something that could then be torn down. So that is kind of what the idea that we started, that we wanted to start to look at, could we get a design set up for that process to kind of look at those three different ways to get some Wi-Fi to the high schools while we obviously don't want to wait until construction's completely finished. Is there a way to start this process in the meantime? Anything else?
Couldn't have said it better myself.
He's taught me well now, the construction part. So we are asking for your approval of this agreement so that we could begin just the design portion of a high school Wi-Fi project at the two comprehensive high schools.
Okay, is there anyone from the public wanting to talk to this? I've seen none. We'll bring it back to the board. And my question just is, it's my understanding this will be an ongoing project that will begin with the least impacted the areas that will not be impacted by construction, but then as construction occurs and completes, we'll move along until this will be ongoing over a long period of time.
This specific project is anticipated to be this summer. So it'll dispatch Wi-Fi to the specific areas that the principals have identified. It's just what level of construction we will put those devices in. For example, in a room that's going to have minimal renovation or is planned to have minimal renovation, we'll make that a permanent installation. So we will install the wires in the ceiling. We'll take it all the way back to the head end room. We'll install it as if it's going to be there forever. In a room that may have some major renovation, we'll probably do it as a little more of a temporary installation so that it can be easily removed and reinstalled when the final is when we come back through. So it'll be a surface mount, and we won't take it all the way back to the head end. The plan is to kind of take one of the computer ports in the classroom and just plug it in there. So ISNT, it's a pretty creative solution that they came up with to get Wi-Fi in spaces that may be renovated heavily in 3 or 4 years, but they just can't wait for it. So we've got a real cost-effective solution to get that going.
Okay, thank you for that clarification.
But the equipment will be reused. That's right. The nice thing is what right. We're buying is it can either be reused anywhere, really, because it's our district standard.
It's just the wiring piece.
Correct.
That would be.
Yeah.
Okay, Mr. Unger.
Tell me about Pacific Beach.
We're already complete.
Okay, thank you.
Anyone else? All right. So you are seeking approval this evening. Is that right?
Yes, please.
All right. Anyone like to make a motion to approve the 2015 high school Wi-Fi project design phase?
I'll make that motion.
Mr. Unger, second. And second by Mr. Quessenberry. Any further discussion? No. Yes, Mrs.
This agreement covers only design and sort of preliminary design, actually, not complete design, construction ready.
The intent is to do a similar process that we used last summer in the elementary schools. So we're engaging Thoma Electric to come in, do a what they call a builder set to be able to secure pricing, and then would. The intent is to move into a lease-leaseback agreement with them based on the price that's given and making sure that that's agreeable to all parties, similar to the way we did it last summer.
So this particular agreement is for $22,000 worth of pre-construction design?
Correct, correct.
And based on what is designed under this agreement, we should be able to ascertain some hard construction costs?
Correct. We'll get a hard bid from Thoma Electric, basically.
May we just be aware of that figure when it's known?
Oh, yeah. We'll have to bring that contract back to the board as a separate agreement.
Thank you.
So.
Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? All right. Thank you very much. 10.02 EL and Intervention Programs presentation.
Good evening. It's my pleasure to introduce to you tonight Don Addis, who is our K-12 EL and Intervention teacher on special assignment, who's here to give you her first presentation. That will be an update on the work that she's been doing to truly become our resident expert on the new ELD standards, as well as getting that first blush on interventions that we have in our district and where we're moving forward.
So good evening. Thank you for having me here this evening. As you know, I'm Dawn Addis, and I wear two hats in my position. One is to work with our English learner program, and the other is to work with our intervention model. And so as I go through this evening, I'm going to first present to you about the English learner program, and then I'll transition into the intervention model. And I'll give you a little bit of background of some changes that are happening in California, and then talk about what we've done this year and where we're going next year in terms of both our English learner program and the intervention model. So in our English learner program, we are really experiencing some changes in California. And I know that in the Friday notes, I provided some information to you about the new ELD standards and new ELD framework. And one of the important things to note about the new perspective in California is that English learners are really facing this unique challenge of learning English as an additional language, as they're also learning grade level content. And so this is really different from past practice, where students who are learning English were thought to be on this sort of on-ramp to grade level curriculum. So for instance, I'll just pick an example. In middle school math, say, if you're an English learner, you would be placed in a lower level math class while you were learning English. And then once you learned English well enough, you might enter into grade level academics. And now what the state is seeing is that students really need to access both. They need both to be learning English, high level of English, and grade level content. And so this is really a shift for our students who are learning English. It's a unique challenge, but also for teachers in educational systems, right? So we have this unique challenge that we're facing. And so this year, we've sort of gone into three areas. And the first was really delving into professional learning with some of our teacher leaders and our site administrators. And I had the pleasure of conducting professional development with our EL specialists and coaches at the elementary level to really look at the standards and the framework and instructional practice. I also got to work with site administrators and we had the really exciting opportunity to think outside the box and bring some teams of people to SLOCO to really delve in. And what we did is we brought our instructional assistants and our ELD teachers and then volunteer content area teachers so that they could all work together to learn about the standards, to learn about new pedagogy, and then to plan lessons together. And this was a very, very popular and exciting opportunity for these teams of people. So that was one area that we worked in terms of supporting these new shifts. Another area that we've been working is creating a support matrix. And what I mean by that is, what's guaranteed for all English learners across our district, K-12? And so the work we've done there is a survey of all our programs to create a baseline, but also we really wanted to address our progressions so that students who are enrolled in secondary ELD classes could remain college and career ready by having A through G approved courses. And I know you heard about the approval plan for the ELD2 course for A through G. And then the other area of focus that Amy and I worked on was the Title III plan development, because that's really what shapes our focus and our goals and our strategic work next year in terms of how we implement the new standards and the new framework. So that brings me to where we're going next year in the area of the English Learner Program. And we have three main areas of focus there. The first being student discourse, the second being parent engagement, and the third being teacher learning and support. And I wanted to talk a little bit about student discourse because it sounds really good, but it can be somewhat of a nebulous term to people. And so what we mean by student discourse is there's a couple sayings I like to remember, which one is the student who talks the most learns the most, and that English learners really need many miles on the tongue because they're learning language, so they need to use language. But they shouldn't be talking just for talk's sake. So we're not having conversation or discourse just for the sake of hearing ourselves or practicing our language, because we have that goal of learning English while engaging in grade level content. And so discourse really needs to be around what students are learning. So what are our discourse practices for English learners as they engage in mathematics, grade level content, as they engage in English language arts or science or social studies at grade level? And how can we leverage discourse strategies to support students in achieving both of those goals? And then the second area of focus is our parent engagement, because one of the shifts in the new standards and frameworks is really looking at what the assets are that students bring when they enter our school systems and how we can leverage those assets as we support students in learning English and content. And so we recognize parents as an integral part of that. And so one of our areas of focus is the offerings that we already have, like what are our participation rates for back to school night for our English learner families, or what are our participation rates for other existing school functions. But the second facet of that is increasing our opportunities for parent engagement as it relates to education. And so we have Latino literacy that you may be familiar with at many of our we've had it at various elementary sites and existing at one site now, where parents and students engage in an outside of the school day literacy activity with joint reading and creating a memory book together. But we're looking at expanding that opportunity to the college and career readiness Latino literacy, which is a middle school and high school program, so that we can be sort of keeping our students focused, our English learners focused on college and career readiness. And then the third facet for next year is really listening to our teachers in terms of what they need for their learning and their support and how we can supply what they need in terms of the new standards, new pedagogy, new philosophy, and knowing how to instruct English learners both so that they learn high levels of English and engage in grade level curriculum. and content. So that's our English learner program. I'm going to put on my other hat and move on to the intervention model. And so there's been a shift in terms of how we see intervention as well. And I'll say that in the past, I think most people thought of intervention as remediation. So it was if kids weren't keeping up, they went into separate classes. They might go into more technical classes, but they really didn't have this door open to college and career readiness. And so now when we think about intervention, it's what ways do we keep doors open for students, right? And so we know that it's through strategic and targeted instruction that we can help students who are struggling academically to maintain on this pathway of college and career readiness while also supporting skills gaps and trying to address skills gaps. So it's really a different framework for thinking about intervention, K-12 and district-wide. So what we've done this year is just the beginning. We started with secondary math intervention, not because there was something wrong with math, but because a lot of work had already been done in mathematics, right? So last year you looked at a lot of the acceleration part of the pathway for mathematics, and this year it was really time to flesh that out by adding on what does intervention look like. And so it's been a highly collaborative process working with administrators, counselors, math department heads, current math intervention teachers, and really looking at how do we identify students and then how do we meet their needs in real time and what are our processes for doing that. In addition to that, I did quite a bit of research with visiting sites and just doing best practice literature research in terms of what do we want intervention to look like, what do we have in place now, where do we need to go next. And then the final thing that we focused on was our English support models, and so really trying to gauge where are we now in terms of supporting students in ELA and literacy, how are we identifying students who need a literacy intervention, how are we supplying that in a timely manner, and then how do we get students out of the intervention. So doing some foundational work there. And that brings me to where we'd like to go next year for intervention, which is modernizing, unifying, and strengthening. And when I say modernizing for intervention, I'm really talking about how do we use data and how do we use technology to make sure that we're getting the right interventions to the kids who need it in the most timely manner. And what does personalized learning look like for students who have skills gaps? How can we utilize personalized learning through technology to fill skills gaps for kids who could be at a variety of different levels while they're maintaining their pathway to college and career readiness through staying in their core classes? Unifying means looking at our school sites, K-12 and district-wide, and making sure that all students have the same access to intervention if they need it. So, right, a student at one school site would have the same access as a student at another school site. And then strengthening is really about best practice and what does that look like pedagogically, what does it look like in terms of student or teacher strategies, but also what does it look like in terms of how we get kids in and out of interventions in a timely manner so that they don't get stuck and farther away from that college and career readiness. So with that, I'll open up for any questions that you might have or say thank you for having me.
First, I'd like to open it up to the public.
Anyone wishing to speak to this? All right, Mr. Quesenberry.
Hello, Don.
Hi.
So, you know, as an old secondary teacher and as a person with a background in ELD and in reading, I have a little hard time kind of getting a grasp on the secondary level. The elementary, and correct me if I'm wrong, I can see because they're dealing with, you know, a classroom of, let's say, 28 to 31 students. They have them for multiple subjects. They can, in some ways, more readily build in some of the language activities, the vocabulary and stuff. And I'm using some old terms here, like the cognitive academic language stuff, the CALPS type thing. It was always an issue for me as a secondary teacher with getting that idea out to the social studies department, the math department, the science department, that they have a role to play in language development, making sure that if you know, for the EL kids, even for maybe the special ed kids, that some of this language that, let's say, a reciprocal in math, mm-hmm. assuming that because some kids understand what a reciprocal is, some other kids wouldn't, EL kids, it might be a new, and even perhaps saying, we actually have that word as in, reciprocity and some other things like that, and building that in. So am I on the right track when you're saying this is what everybody has to be more aware of, mm-hmm. that when you're teaching an academic subject, that you have these types of learners in your classroom, you have to build your lesson plans and your instructional based on that consideration?
Mm-hmm. Right. So one of the examples I think you're using is that tier two vocabulary that travels across all content areas but can mean things in different settings, right? And one of the things I think we're fortunate for now is that the ELD standards are highly aligned with the ELA and literacy standards. And so many of the requirements in ELA and literacy or social studies or science in terms of language are already embedded into the ELD standards. And so the writers of the ELD standards took a look at the next gen science standards, the Common Core math standards, the social studies standards, the ELA and literacy standards, and they pulled out these the language focus within these standards, and then looked at, what do students need to be able to do in language to be able to function in those curriculums? And so we know now that our new math curriculums, Bridges and CPM, are language-rich, discourse-rich math curriculums. And so I think we're going to see a bit more of a higher alignment with the language expectations in EL as we are in the general education core classroom setting, where more and more all teachers are going to be expected to have students engaging in discourse and collaborative practices. So I don't know if that answers, but
it does to a degree. I also look at the student that's the late entry student, mm-hmm. that comes to us in seventh grade, mm-hmm. or ninth grade. And it's important for them to be able to access the standard curriculum or the curriculum, mm-hmm. that gets the A through G and whatever. With the emphasis on language, though, even in math now, where mm-hmm. A group might come up with a solution or a set of solutions to a problem, and students have to articulate it. And I'm wondering, with the attitude in here that says, treating your native language as an asset, mm-hmm. not necessarily a liability, mm-hmm. How that would look. Would mm-hmm. that look like a student might be able to explain it in Mandarin or Spanish or whatever mm-hmm. language, mm-hmm. Whatever their first language mm-hmm. is. So I'm just curious about
mm-hmm.
that.
Mm-hmm. That's a great question. A lot of questions have come up about how do you leverage native language when you're in a classroom setting, and not everybody understands every language that's spoken, right? I mean, we're somewhat fortunate in that most students speak the same language, other than English, is Spanish in this area. But there's quite a few strategies for that, and we've shared some of them at our professional learning this year, such as allowing students to pre-think in their native language and setting a classroom climate and classroom culture of use your native language as you're pre-thinking before you share your ideas with the classroom. Or if there's more than one student in the classroom who speaks a language other than English, allowing those students to have some discourse together before they produce a final product that they're going to present to the entire classroom. Taking notes in your native language, allowing that to be okay, that if you're, at that newcomer student or that level one or two student who's taking notes in a classroom and really trying to do that translation as best they can, that they could be allowed to do that translation in their own, do the note-taking in their own language. And then for some of our math curriculum, of course, we have books in Spanish, right? That's been one of the important components of our math adoption. So really looking at all the different ways that we would be able to do that.
Okay, Ms. Eisendrath Rogers, then Mr. Buckman, then Mr. Unger.
Thank you. Thank you, Don. So the talk more, learn more concept really resonates. I get mm-hmm. how that works. Mm-hmm. And so I'm wondering whether the manipulatives that we now have in the classroom sort of lends itself to sort of touch more, learn more, whether that becomes more of a universal language in a classroom.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And so when we're looking at how students who are learning English as an additional language, we still need that multimodal teaching, right? And so the manipulatives and the visuals are going to be an anchor for many of those discussions, especially with students who are at the beginning stages of their language learning. So it blends really well. I would say where we're going with the ELD standards blends extremely well with what we know about best practice instruction already in terms of learn more, do more, using visuals, using multimodal, using total physical response strategies, using kinesthetics, those kinds of things. Like, all of what we know about good teaching still exists. It's just that we want to shift from, let's put you in a separate track mm-hmm. while you're learning English, and then we'll get you to this good, best practice, rich, engaging curriculum. It's that we want to be, you know, have students learning language while they're engaged in the grade level content and using all of our first best practices in teaching.
Love that. Thank
yeah.
you.
Yeah, it's exciting.
Mr. Buckman.
Thank you. Hi.
Hey.
So I read through this, and I came across this paragraph, and I just love it, and a lot of my questions have been answered, and I appreciate that. Okay. But one of the fragments that came out for me was, designated instruction means the English learners will experience a protected time during the school day. So when I read designated learners, am I really reading pull out?
Not necessarily.
Okay.
So integrated and designated instruction are new terms. Integrated and designated English language development instruction are new terms, and they're not a time or a place. They're a type of instruction. Okay. And so in designated instruction, the ELD standards become the focal standards. So if I'm, say, in a workshop model mm-hmm. in an elementary, I'll just kind of pull something out. Say I'm doing a workshop model, reader's workshop, and I'm working with a small group, mm-hmm. and I've got a group of English learners that are at similar levels, then I may pull them, and really the focus of my instruction for those few minutes are the ELD standards. We're no longer obligated to half hour, you know, how a number of minutes, right? But it's what those students need in real time to support their content learning as well as their language development. And the one super important thing about that designated instruction is that it really needs to be linked to what's happening in the classroom. Okay. So that it's no longer this sort of like place that you go right. to do ELD, and it may or may not be connected. It really needs to be connected with what's going on in the core area.
So this is a 1984 talk. This is good stuff.
It's super exciting.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a really good direction to be going.
Thanks. Don, I have another question,
yeah.
and this sort of occurred to me almost tongue-in-cheek,
mm-hmm.
and so I don't want it really to come across that way, but we've been discussing graduation requirements
Absolutely.
As a board, and we're looking forward to a study session, and one of them is a two-year of a foreign language. And so I'm mm-hmm. thinking at Pacheco, for example, mm-hmm. we have a lot of kids that are taking 2 years mm-hmm. as a foreign language. In fact, my memory of high school Spanish was, where's the library? Well, that mm-hmm. was French, où est la bibliothèque? But there was a lot of just conversational mm-hmm. and not this second-tier language going on. And mm-hmm. I don't know what we're teaching at high school now, but it sounds like the 2 years that may take to transition or the 4 years may be more difficult. So I'm just throwing this out, and I have no idea where it could possibly go. A lot of our kids are already meeting the two-year foreign language commitment. Thanks for your time.
Well, can I make a comment about
that? I'd love you to.
I'm really glad you brought up Pacheco. Obviously, it's dear to my heart. But So, you know, our district offers the bilingual seal, and there's very specific criteria, but recently I've been engaged in conversations with Pacheco and Laguna about some kind of pathway award, right? So that when we know students are on a pathway to bilingualism and biliteracy, how can we recognize that? And that's not a state criteria, that's just sort of an informal award that students could get. And it doesn't exactly speak to your question, but it is a way of recognizing students who are achieving at these high levels of bilingualism and biliteracy and putting in the effort towards getting that bilingual seal on their diploma.
Great.
Thank you.
Mr. Unger.
Yeah, I was just wondering how what you're doing is reflected in our LCAP.
Can you say it again?
Sure. How is this reflected in our LCAP, or is it reflected in our LCAP?
That's a great question.
Thank you, Amy.
yeah.
Well, the LCAP hasn't been written yet, so we're taking in the feedback, and it will certainly, the work, particularly in our Title III plan, will be reflected in the LCAP. But we already have the Title III plan completed. That's where you'll see a lot of it, the PD that's going to be taking place, the parent engagement piece that she talked about, and the focus on student discourse. That plan's already been written. Whether we reference that into the LCAP is yet to be seen.
Don's position was part of this year's LCAP also.
Yeah. That's true. Good
point. Okay, anyone else? Thank you for a very informative and well-spoken presentation.
Thanks to you guys.
All right, item 10.03, decision on Pacheco 9010 option.
Well, this is a good segue talking about English learners.
Well timed.
At the March 17th board meeting, the last board meeting, you had a presentation on a proposed adjustment to the Pacheco dual immersion program. While there's a lot of research you can read, it seems compelling that students who will have higher Spanish proficiency outcomes if they begin their program primarily in Spanish for both English-only students and English-learning students. And this model has no detriment to eventual English attainment for all. So the proposal does not change the composition of the school. I think that's one of those misnomers out there. It's still a 50% English learner, 50% English-only composition at the school, but is built on the premise that all students will learn primarily Spanish first, 90% of the time in kindergarten, and then transitioning to 80% in first grade Spanish, etc., until right about third grade, it resembles a fairly similar program to what is in place. This idea has been floated with the parent community, as well as those who may be immediately affected, which would be those families entering kindergarten next year. And there is still a waiting list. We still will have a lottery for Pacheco, so it's a popular idea. Students would not be segregated by language proficiency, and that is one of the hallmarks of doing this program this way. All students would be blended in their classes. The school staff and district staff is recommending this change for the 2015-16 school year, which is this fall, because it is a more common way of doing dual immersion, and we believe the school is ready for the implementation. So we would like the board to act tonight so that we can let all prospective kindergarten families know what to expect before the lottery. Mr. Mayfield, and it looks like five of his finest teachers are here to also answer any questions the board may have. It's our recommendation that we begin a 90-10 model of dual language immersion beginning in the fall.
Okay, first I need to take this to the public. Anyone here wishing to speak to this? All right, I'll bring it back to the board. Any comment, questions? Mr. Quisenberry.
I'm not sure we have sufficiently grilled Mr. Mayfield on this. No, I'm fine. I move approval.
Is there a second? Do you have any comments? Do you have any comments about this?
Yeah. I assume you want to hear them.
Yeah.
Okay. I am totally in favor of this because, personally, when you go through the system that's currently in place, if you don't completely understand Spanish, like myself, it makes some of the situations extremely hard. So say you have your first week in English and you start at level one with math. Moving on to level two and you don't completely understand Spanish, you're lost. And then you have to build on from level two and level three. So from level two on up, you don't know what you're doing because you don't completely understand. And it's not at the fault of any of the teachers, obviously, but it makes it completely hard. And it doesn't just end at the elementary school level. I know in my math class this year, I had two other fellow alumnus who one of them spoke Spanish in his house, and another one didn't, like myself. And he and I, the one who didn't speak Spanish in his household, we were not as wired mathematically because we just didn't get those basic concepts. But the other one who did, he was proficient in it. He was able to completely understand all the concepts. And albeit AP Statistics is a very hard class, but I think that in the situation where you don't have the building blocks to formulate the complete immersion in the first couple of years, it really, really hurts you in those crucial last couple of elementary school years, because that's when you're learning concepts that you're going to be using for the rest of your education life, especially in math. So I am 100% in favor of this program.
Thank you. Thank you for your comments. Ms. Eisendrath-Rogers?
I was just going to second that, but doesn't that just second what Don just said to us about EL learners, too? So we know it works both ways.
Mr. Unger? Okay. Any further discussion? We have a motion. Do we have a second?
And a second.
And a second. All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Go forward. Make it happen. All right. Item 10.04, Adult School Program Review and Update.
Good evening. I can't see you with this. Sally Ames, Coordinator of Adult Education Program. We're going to talk tonight about where we are and where we're going in adult education. Our focus for the past few years has been building community. We have three main programs: parent education, adult basic, and secondary education, and citizenship. We're going to talk about EL. And lifelong learners are our community programs. Our students are ages prenatal to 100. They should be celebrating. That's good news. Okay, so parent education. Did the PowerPoint not come up? Or is it? Okay, got it. Thanks. In the parent education, we have two main programs: parent participation, and then a parent education program. In parent participation, parents bring their children 0 to 5. Anyone any adult in a parenting role can come to those classes. They come to a classroom that's a preschool setting. So if they're bringing a toddler, the whole classroom is set up for a toddler. And the children learn social skills and early literacy, and they play indoor and out. And the parents learn child development, and they meet people that are going through the same things they're going through and have children of the same ages. Within that program, we have two cooperative preschools, one at Morro Bay and one at San Luis Obispo. In that program, the children come 2 or 3 days a week, and the parent comes about once a week, and they support the instruction in that class. The parent supports the instruction. Then we have a parent education program. Our parent education typically is done at night. The parents come and the children have childcare, are in childcare. We have a grant. That's how we run our parent education program, through Parent Connection of San Luis Obispo County. They give us the funds for 6 classes, And we stretched that money to offer, in 2014, we offered 14 of those classes. We're in our fifth year with this grant. We offer classes such as active parenting, social media for parents, no drama discipline, and they left too soon, and just next month we'll be doing La Disciplina Efectiva. I hope I pronounced that well enough. At Pacheco. We try to have a parent education class at each of our Title I schools every year. And at least one class in Spanish, sometimes more. The community collaboration. We, as I said, have been working on building community, and in parent education we've been doing that for many years in many different ways. But I wanted to let you know about one newly formed group, and I put in your packet, you should have an adult school catalog, in your packet I put this flyer of our first forum. It's called Prenatal to Five Children's Advocacy Network, and the reason I put this in is so that you could see all of our partners. We did this forum in November on parental substance abuse. Then the group supported a networking lunch at our Tina Payne Bryson event in February. She came, she's a national bookseller, No Drama Discipline and Whole Brain Child. We did a networking lunch, and then we're planning a maternal wellness event in May that will be on postpartum depression. So we have a nice group that we're working with in our community on early childhood. Our goal in this program is to have a place where children can have a whole group of adults they can trust. Margaret Mead. So our demographics, over 1,000 families enrolled in a parent education class in 2014. And that is a very exciting number for me. We have about 500 families each trimester in parent participation. We run about 32 classes each trimester. And then, as I said before, about 14 parent education classes in a year, or somewhere between 2 and 5. So you can see we have a lot of fun in that program, as well as learning, of course. The second program is really the core mission of the adult school: adult basic education, adult secondary education, and citizenship. Helping students get their adult high school diploma is our core mission, and also very rewarding. We also offer basic education and basic skills. The words aren't coming up. That's okay. I didn't know it would do it. You can put them all up at once if you want to. That's fine. Basic skills for those who need the most basic skills. And then test preparation for the high school equivalency. We are the Pearson VUE Testing Center for GED and the ETS Testing Center for HISET. We offered our first HISET test on Friday. And we also offer testing at the jail. And then for citizenship, we help them through the process, candidates through the process. If they need to learn English, we help them find a class for that. We help them go through the paperwork, make through the application, that kind of, and then study for the test. So in 2014, we had 11 students in our basic education, 215 in our secondary education, and 38 graduates. We don't currently have any data on our students that went on to take the GED. So you can see from that picture, I wanted to state for a minute, that graduating is sometimes a family affair. In the first picture, we have dad, and you can't quite see, but the young woman is pregnant, and then in the next picture, she's graduating, and he's holding their young son. And then the other picture, the young man got his diploma, And a few months later, his stepfather followed suit, and so we had a double graduation. It was the first one we remember. So that was a great day. That is our amazing Jack Mitchell. He has been such a gift to our school for many years. I worked with him long ago, and then he came back. So, all right, now we're ready for community programs. So we offer a large variety of community classes. We have an adult fitness program, and I would say that our specialty is Forever Fit for 50-plus. That started as an older adults program, and we've kept that program going. But you can see we've expanded it quite a bit. We've expanded into lots of different kinds of fitness. Lifelong learning. We have a variety of classes, something for everyone. We're always looking for new ideas. Those are some of the things that we offer. We offer these community programs day and night, 6 days a week, 6:30 a.m. to 9:15 p.m. Tonight, behind you, there has been yoga, Pilates, and Aikido. Behind me, knitting up the stairs, is guitar, and then at other sites, there's been language and other fitness classes and things. And Mr. Mitchell, the great Mr. Mitchell, upstairs tonight teaching as well. So in our community programs, over 2,000 community members enrolled, and there's a variety of pictures there, even some district staff. We appreciate the district staff that supports and comes get enrichment in our program. So this is where we are. 3,330 community members taking adult education classes. That's actually 2014 data. 6,574 total enrollments, which means that we have many returning customers. Classes are held at a variety of sites all throughout San Luis Coastal and in Avila Community Center and local businesses. About 170 classes each trimester. Scholarships. Through the generous donation from our community and our staff and students, I'm happy to say we have a healthy scholarship fund. In 2003, we started the Parent Participation Program Scholarship Fund, and our teachers offer an event, have events each year that raises those funds. In fact, the next one is September 26th. We'll have Sunset Over Slow again. So save the date. And then in 2012, our wonderful teacher, Catherine Arthur, she's our singing teacher, and her students got together and they started an adult, actually it started as a senior scholarship program. And it's been so successful that we have now opened that up to all adults that need support and can take a class. They offer a concert series. So we strive to make adult school affordable to all members of our community. So where we're going. The focus for adult education in California is narrowing. It's all about tomorrow's workforce. Acquiring new skills, enhancing the resume, getting ready for college and career. For the past 2 years, we have been working to restructure California's adult, back one, we missed one. There we are. They've been working to restructure California's adult education system. We had what was called AB 86, Assembly Bill 86. We actually had a whole event just called AB 86. In Sacramento. AB 86 was a 2-year planning grant, and we have now formed San Luis Obispo County Adult Education Consortia. We call it Slow Cake. Slow Cake doesn't sound good. So we call it Slow Cake. There are 70 regional consortia in the state, all with their own individual plan. Our plans were due in February, so they've already gone in. The members of our SLOCAC, Cuesta College non-credit, they represent North County, San Luis Coastal represents Central County, Lucia Mar represents South County. We're central, they're south. There are five mandated programs in the area in this AB 86, and I'm going to speak to that the next slide. We'll have six major sites throughout the county where we'll be offering adult education: Oceano, Napomo, the Adult School, Coastal Family Resource Center, San Luis Cuesta site, and North County Cuesta site. And we're in collaboration with local providers of adult services. In AB 86 language, they're called the partners, the libraries, county office of ed, jail, the private sector. Those are all examples of that. And we've been working to find needs in the gaps in services, and that's what we put into our plan. I have the plan for you. If you would like to see it, I can email it to you. It's almost 100 pages long. So now I'm on the five mandated program areas. Adult basic ed and adult secondary education. We have a great need for this in our county. As you can see, over 30,000. This is 2013 census data. One in five adults in the state of California does not have a high school diploma. So we have a lot of work to do. Currently, all of our agencies offer some kind of adult basic and secondary ed. ESL. The ESL program in our county is currently offered through Cuesta, Cuesta non-credit. Last year, Lucia Mar lost its funding, and we closed our program in 2009. So through the consortia, we were able to bring an ESL class to Pacheco. They have a class Monday and Wednesday nights, and on our first night, this has been over a year now, they had 43 students show up the first night. So we know there's a great need. I want to take a detour for a minute to back to building community and talk to you about the Promotores Collaborative of San Luis Obispo County. I put that little flyer in your packet as well so that you could see more about it if you don't know about it. I hope you'll be hearing more about this group in the future. As I said, we closed our ESL program in 2009, but we stayed connected to the Spanish-speaking community. Shortly thereafter, we received a grant for parent education as well as parent leadership. And for 2 years, we ran parent leadership classes for the Spanish-speaking adults. And then from that developed this Promotores Collaborative San Luis Obispo County. Last week, we had an emotional CPR class Thursday and Friday, an enthusiastic group of leaders. You might have heard them laughing. And next month we'll be doing a computer literacy class for Latinas. So we've stayed connected with that group. On to CTE. CTE, we have very, very limited courses in San Luis Obispo County. Cuesta, and I'm talking non-credit, has a few. These are the classes that we offer, the Class B driver course, QuickBooks, Excel, some computer classes. Those classes were CTE before flex funding, and we hope that moving forward we'll be able to put some of those courses back in. But the consortia also has ideas for specific CTE classes that we would be doing. They will be... the goal or the idea with AB 86 is that they are short-term certificates, so classes that are about 6 weeks in general. Adults with significant disabilities. All of the programs in this county are currently with private industries, aside from our 18 to 22-year-olds that we in our PREPARE program. We hope to strengthen the relationship with our PREPARE program. LUCMR has a similar program. And then apprenticeship, not currently offered in San Luis Obispo County, and as far as we know, never has been offered in San Luis Obispo County. So that program will naturally grow from our CTE program. So you see that when we lost the funding, we lost several programs, but we never lost our core. And since we've been strengthening our community in the time being, I think going forward we're starting from a good place going forward. The ribbon that weaves this all together is building community. We've been strengthening our relationships with our partners in the early childhood community. We've been reaching out to our community through our lifelong learning and community programs and things like Promotoras. And we're now collaborating with our adult education partners through our consortia. So bringing that all together to build community. If you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. Thank you.
Anyone from the public wishing to address any of these topics? Good evening. This is Neuhauser. As you know, you will have 3 minutes to speak.
My name is Judy Neuhauser. I live in Los Osos. And I'm also an ex-teacher in San Luis Coastal. Couple questions. Just maybe, Sally, you can help. I'm just curious as to what the demographics as far as EL goes on the parent participation in the early childhood programs. Do you have any data on that?
I don't. Okay. Visually, I would say 5-10%. It depends on who you're. If you're just wanting to know.
I'm just wondering if our EL families are finding ways to access it.
Some.
Sally, can you?
I apologize. Yes. Some.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. I guess one of the things that I'm really curious about is I used to teach at Pacheco. That was my first teaching assignment in San Luis Coastal, and I taught sixth grade. And I'm really pleased to see them going to a 90-10 program. Also, I think we'll see how it winds out. But one of the things that I noticed is it's a very difficult and very rigorous program for somebody coming into it. A child coming into it needs very long, strong language skills. And what I've heard over the past number of years is that Pacheco has been, through the Welcome Center, looking at children who have low language skills in their primary language and really talking to the parents about whether this is an appropriate placement for their child. And oftentimes the parents will decide that it's not. But what that means is those children are then coming to their neighborhood schools with very low language skills. And oftentimes that can be through parents not talking to their children and whatnot. And so I'd be really interested in the school board being able to support Sally's program in really targeting some of those EL parents for early childhood. If we're going to close the gap, you have to start early. And we need the kinds of recruitment that will really go after those. Sending flyers home in Spanish doesn't work. A lot of the parents don't read in Spanish. They speak it, but they don't read it. And so that outreach has to be done in a very personable way. And, I mean, I understand that adult ed is working on extremely limited resources. But I'd really like to see the board begin to look at how could they really foster the ability of adult ed to reach out very targetedly to those parents who are in their neighborhood schools. And that includes the coast. Having coastal parents going into San Luis Obispo for either ESL or for parents is very difficult for them. You know, there's churches that have large groups of second language learners. How can we begin to approach that? So I'd really like to see that. I've had the pleasant experience of dealing with some of the adult ed classes that adult ed has, especially their fitness classes. And I'd really like to thank San Luis Coastal for supporting that, because as a teacher, it was really wonderful to be able to go to classes in my community. Again, you know, you come off of school, you don't have the time to be able to drive into San Luis Obispo. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for your comments. Before I open up to the board, I just wanted to point out that from the time I have lived in San Luis Obispo, it's about 19 years now, I've taken parenting classes, I've taken yoga, I've taken a couple of glass classes. I have a quite lovely bowl that looks not quite like a fifth grader, a five-year-old made it, but I'm very proud of it. And I was at an event a few weeks ago with a friend, and we were talking about general conversation, and she pointed out that she has been taking Tai Chi through San Luis Coastal for 30 years, which just amazed me, since I think she said from the first year it was offered, she still comes. This is her, she's tried it a few other places, but she still comes here. So I thought that was a great tribute to one of the programs. Then I know many people who, you know, had I known about parent participation when I first moved up here, I'm sure I would have participated in it, but I didn't. I learned about it when my son went to kindergarten, so it was a little, learned about a little after the fact. But I'm a huge fan of continuing adult education. I think it's a great boost to our community in the widest possible audience we're able to serve and do outreach for those who may benefit from it greatly but just don't know about it at this time. So, Ms. Eisendrath Rogers?
Ms. Ames, I would also just like to tell you about one of your success stories that you may or may not know about. He's my stepson-in-law, and came to this country from Mali speaking very little English, and lived with me on San Luis Drive, got up on and rode his bicycle every morning at 4:30 to UPS to work, came back through this area and came to your adult school every afternoon, came straight home, did his homework all evening, great example for my children, and got up the next day and repeated all of that. Completed his GED, completed his citizenship test, got a job as a driver now at UPS, and so you've just launched a great, you know, English-speaking American citizen, and I just thank you for that.
I'll leave for my time. I'll say you're welcome.
Mr. Quisenberry.
Oh, thank you. Well, I'm also a big fan of adult education. I taught a citizenship class in 1982, I think. I went to my father's high school graduation through adult education, 1957 or so. And my grandson goes to the parent participation program in Morro Bay. I believe it's at Del Mar, or maybe it's at Morro Elementary.
Yeah.
And I think it's a wonderful program. But I think Ms. Neuhauser made a great point, is maybe we could improve our outreach to the Spanish-speaking and the Ilocano-speaking community to encourage more of those parents to participate with their children. I think it's a very, very... I see the results in my grandson's socialization skills. You know, he goes up to the park and introduces himself, and he's 3 years old, and tries to make friends. And so, you know, it's been really, really important.
Yeah.
I also wanted to mention that the guitar class. This is in the nature of one complaint. Everything else is wonderful. is on Tuesday nights, you know.
And you'd like to go, yes.
And right now, my good friend and neighbor is over there, really improving his guitar technique, and you know.
He's a big fan.
So anyway, I thank you very much for what you do.
We had a parent participation class. I don't know if Judy remembers, but the district hired our teacher from us, so she's an awesome transitional kindergarten teacher now. But we did have parent participation in Spanish, and we've been looking to bring it back all along. So
I hope, I don't know if I should say this out loud, but I hope that with the ESL funding that I might be able to do something for the Spanish-speaking community and the way of parenting. That plus had a good meeting today with our grant group. So I think there may be some more funding there as well.
Mr. Unger.
Yeah, thank you. I too am interested in Judy, what you were talking about, and I think district-wide it's important for us to have that kind of outreach to our second language families. And I'll be interested to continue to hear about this and to continue to find out what we can do about outreach for parents, because we know what the lives of parents affect the lives of kids. So I think I'll be asking for more information with the advanced agenda and see if we can figure something out. Thank you.
Anyone else? Thank you. Thank you very much. All right. 10.05, approve SLCTA negotiated agreement for 2014 through 2016.
Seven items on the agenda are near and dear to my heart regarding my work life. The last two items were near and dear to my home life. My daughter, who will be attending SLO High here next year, spent the first 12 weeks of her life in parent participation school here up the hill, and she attended Pastor Robles' 90-10 program at Georgia Brown Elementary. So those were, thank you for that decision. I'm really pleased that Pacheco will be a 90-10 program. Okay, this item is about another very exciting. We reached an agreement with the San Luis Coastal Teachers Association, and so this is your opportunity to approve the agreement. A few highlights from that agreement are that this offers a retroactive 4% salary increase to July 1st of 2014 for this year. It is agreed that there will be no cost of living for last year. The other groups, which received a $500 off schedule last year, we will be giving that to the San Luis Coastal teachers this year in 14-15. And then for 15-16, there will be no cost of living adjustment, but we have agreed to reopen negotiations to discuss compensation if the district's property taxes come in at 5% or greater. Another important element in this agreement is that we have given definition to our teacher collaboration time, or also affectionately called TCT times, which are the late start Mondays. This is also for elementary prep time. This puts prep time for grades first through third grade in the contract, and prior to that we had not had elementary for grades first through third grade elementary prep time in the contract. And this also standardizes and increases our elementary instructional minutes. At most sites, I think the thing that you will see is an additional 20 minutes at each school site, but because our schools, there's a wide variety of student instructional minutes across of our schools, it will impact different schools, some schools more than others. But those are the highlights from this agreement. And so my recommendation would be that you approve this tentative agreement.
Anyone from the public wishing to speak to this? Seeing none, we'll come back to the board. Any discussion? Mr. Unger.
I'd like to move approval of item 10.05.
Is there a second? And second by Mr. Buckman. Any, Mr. Millar.
I'd just like to make a couple of observations. One is, over the past few weeks, notwithstanding the rhetoric, I never had a moment's fear that our negotiation process would come through for us like it has time and again. I know some of what goes on is kind of pro forma, but we do value our teachers. That's the only reason we're all here. We do respect them. We do honor them. We do the right thing, but the right thing is a complex picture. I'm glad both sides in the negotiations hung in there and accomplished this. I also am very pleased that we addressed work situations that the teachers were making clear to us by increasing some collaboration time and prep time. I think it was very important for us to address work issues. And I'm just thrilled that we have it all resolved. So I would just say for 2015-16 and in the future, don't panic. take a deep breath. The negotiation process works. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your comments, Mr. Millar. I would echo those and state that, simply add that our students will really benefit, and that's why we're here. On that note, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? We have 6 ayes and 1 absence. Item. So you just stay where you are.
I am going to stay right here. Item 10.06 is the approval of the CSEA negotiated agreement. We're pleased to reach agreement with our classified CSEA unit. This agreement allows for an agreement for the years of 2014-15 and 15-16. It gives that same 4% increase retroactive to July 1st of 2014 to our CSEA members, and would reopen negotiations only if property taxes were at 5% or greater for next year. It also gives positions that require bilingual skills an additional 2.5% effective tomorrow, should this pass. And then, and that's the extent of this agreement.
Anyone from the public wishing to discuss this? This is Newhouse. Let me just set up my timer. I didn't have time to do that.
Hi, this
last
is Judy.
Time.
I'll be quick. This is okay. Judy Newhouser. I live in Los Osos. I'm really pleased to hear that you're giving some sort of a reward for bilingualism, and I wish you would consider it next time for the teachers also. To have teachers that are working in the second language and in two languages needs to be respected, and it needs to be compensated. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Eisendrath Rogers, then Mr. Millar.
I would like to move approval of the CSEA negotiated agreement for 2014-15.
I'll second.
Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? We have 6 ayes and 1 absence.
And I'd like to thank Mrs. Eisendrath Rogers for participating as part of the CSEA negotiating team.
Thank you. And thank you for that work, Catherine. 10.07.
So the next item is approval to increase our limited-term substitute salary schedule. Attached, you'll see that we're recommending a 4% increase to most of the positions on the salary schedule effective tomorrow, April 1st. The positions that we did not recommend a 4% increase to were our student aid position. And then our substitute teachers, we had revisited the long-term substitutes in the past, but we've kept the other substitute teachers at the same amount. The adult school substitutes would be effective July 1st of 2015, but that is a 4% increase for them as well. It just will not occur until July 1st of 2015.
Thank you. Anyone from the public wishing to discuss this? I'm all ready for you.
Judy Newhouser from Los Osos. Would you please open that up so that we can look at the schedule? I just want it. I want it up there, if that's possible.
Of course, Brian's gone.
It's a blue box.
No, she clicked it. It's not working.
There we go. I have to tell you, I was a little shocked when I saw this. If I look at a substitute teacher for a full day, they're paid $100 for 7 hours. That's just a tad over $14 an hour. That's substantially under anybody coming in for fiscal. It's substantially under anybody at clerical or print shop. It's substantially under bus driver. It's substantially under accompanist. It's almost exactly the same as instructional aid. It's less than a dollar difference per hour as instructional aid. And I'm shocked that the people that you're putting in front of the students is being paid so low. Are you truly expecting them to be babysitters? Is that what the expectation is?
And if that's true, then why are you making your teachers write out subplans? And if you're expecting those people to teach, then you need to compensate them adequately as professionals, as teachers. I'm shocked. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. Okay. Any other additional discussion from the public? I'll bring it back to the board. Any discussion? Do we have a motion with regard to item 10.07?
I'll move approval of item 10.07.
All right. We have a motion and a second. Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right. Passes 6-0, one absence. Item 10.08.
So item 10.08 is approval of the confidential employees' salary schedule, and this reflects no cost of living for last year, a 4% retroactive to July 1st of the beginning of this year. And again, the no cost of living except for the agreement to reopen, sit down, and discuss compensation next year should the property taxes be at 5% or greater. And it allows a technology stipend or an allowance for the executive assistant to the superintendent position.
Anyone from the public wishing to address this? Seeing none, we'll come back to the board. Any discussion? Anyone wishing to make a motion?
I move approval.
All right. Is there a second? All right. Motion by Mr. Quesenberry, second by Mr. Buckman. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right. Carry 6-0, one absence. Carry on.
Okay, item 10.9, you will recognize a similar theme in that reflects no cost of living adjustment for 13-14, 4% retroactive to July 1st of 2014 for this year, no cost of living for next year unless the property taxes come in at 5% or greater.
All right. Anyone from the public? Back to the board. Any discussion? Is there a motion?
I'll move it.
Mr. Quesenberry? Ms. Eisendrath Rogers, thank you. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries 6-0, one absence.
And then item 10.10 is our last group of employees. Our three contracted employees are two assistant superintendents and superintendent, and it would be doing the same compensation as for the other groups. That is, no cost of living for last year, 4% retroactive to July 1st of this year, and then no costs, and then nothing, no discussion about next year, because as they said, they're not hopeful, but they're not realistic that property taxes will be at 5% or greater.
Okay, thank you. Anyone from the...
Yeah. He's hoping.
We would all like it.
Mr. Pinkerton's hoping.
Be good for our budget. Anyone from the public? Back to the board. Any discussion? A motion would be lovely.
I'll move approval.
I'll second that.
All right. Motion by Mr. Quesenberry, second by Mr. Unger with regard to 10.10. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Right, carry 6-0. Item 10.11, approve revisions to Board Bylaw 9250.
You know, I've been doing this superintendent work for about 8 years, and I've never quite understood how little the community actually understands the work that board members do. While I realize that it's an elected position, it's largely voluntary. And there are certain things that you do receive per this bylaw 9250. Now, what I realize is that we have not visited this bylaw for over a decade. Yet, since I've been here, the board has confronted significant challenges, been confronted with programmatic decisions like those 10 initiatives, the LCAP. You've had to make significant reductions when the economy went sideways and down, and you continue to, I think, shine in all of the right ways. So I'm here tonight just to frame out why I believe you need to revisit Board Policy 9250. 2 years ago, we started a practice called Boardwalks. Now, this practice is voluntary, but each of you have taken it upon yourself to commit to it. And it's twice a month where you visit individual school sites. And you are provided a tour by the principal, and you go through classrooms. You see what's happening on the ground floor. And I know that when you're not able to make those visits, you also take it upon yourself to schedule independent appointments with principals so that you can talk to them about what's going on. You actually are going into classrooms and seeing what's happening. I love that about this board. In addition to that, as all of you know, in November 2014, 72% of our voters said yes to a $177 million bond to renovate our high school, comprehensive high schools, to make necessary improvements to safety throughout the district, as well as to bring it into the 21st century. What you may not have realized, and certainly the public does not realize, is that your job has changed fairly significantly, because in the coming years you will be confronted with contracts, significant responsibilities to make ensuring that our community's assets, their tax dollars, are properly used. And so that burden falls on your shoulders. My job is to make sure that you have the opportunity, you have the best information, and that you have the best team to carry out that mission. Because of the bond that passed, we have initiated a third meeting every month. In addition to the two board walks, that third meeting study session every month is solely devoted to Measure D, to ensure that you have the opportunity to ask questions, to examine those projects, to really ask those pertinent questions. So those are ongoing meetings scheduled throughout the year, every month. So the reason I bring this to you is that your lives have changed as a result of these commitments. You are out and about. You're looking at schools, classrooms. Every week you have a great opportunity to read robust Friday notes from our staff. And I can tell you that each of you are highly committed to the mission of this district. So this brings me to my recommendation to revise Board Bylaw 9250. We worked with legal counsel to make sure that the recently changed modified laws that exist at the legislative level are connected to this revised bylaw. So we know that this is all the most relevant and appropriate use of public funds. So with that said, there are four elements to this board revision. I won't go through them in detail because you have all read them and we've discussed them. However, the monthly stipend that you receive, I'm recommending change by 4%. So that you receive, effective this July, a 4% bump to equate to $263 a month. That's
not an increase of
263. No, total. That is before taxes. So choose to spend that wisely. In addition to that, because I have you driving all over the place from vastly different parts of our district, we have built in a reimbursement model for your miles. This has not been revisited, and I was remiss in not addressing it with you. I know that you have been spending a lot of your own personal money on miles, and this reimbursement model addresses that, I believe, appropriately. And effectively what it means is there are three options. You can take a one-time annual stipend. That one-time annual stipend needs to be accompanied by an ongoing log where you track the miles and then you square up every year. The second model is that it's a strict reimbursement. You track your miles and turn in your receipts, turn in your log, and we reimburse you at the IRS rate. And the third model is that you just say you choose not to take any reimbursement. The third element is healthcare, and nothing really has changed here. You have access to the same healthcare coverage provided to our employees. And then the fourth element is technology, and Again, this is a recommendation so that we're all on the same page, have the same tools, have the same access to the information. It's my recommendation that we, the district, provide each of you with a device, laptop, tablet, and as well as a phone to conduct the business of the board. And then that will stay with you along with a data plan for as long as you are a board member. Upon stepping off the board, you need to return that, or we will basically provide you an opportunity to purchase it back. So those are the elements of bylaw revisions of the board bylaw 9250, and it's my recommendation that you approve this, not just for yourselves, but for consideration of future board members that want to step in. I think it's reasonable.
Hey, anyone from the public wishing to address this? Mrs. Neuhauser.
Judy Neuhauser, Les Osses. I am really glad, Dr. Prater, that you brought up the compliment of board members showing up at schools. I can't tell you how important it is to see you at the schools. The one thing that I would add is I think it is also as important as making those appointments with the principals and getting escorted through the school to do unescorted and lunch meetings at the schools, because you will not hear from teachers when they're in the middle of a class. You will not hear what the teachers' concerns are from the principals. You'll hear it from the teachers. And if you value that input, you have to make time for that. And so I would truly encourage you, if you have the time, please plan on coming right before lunch. I'm planning on having lunch or come after school and plan on spending some time after school with some of the teachers, because I think they have extremely valuable input. But you won't get it when you have I hate to make the comparison, but you won't have it when you have a minder with you. You need to have private meetings with the teachers. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Any discussion by the board? Mr. Millar.
Dr. Prater, for the mileage reimbursement, does each individual board member make their own determination about which way they want to go? Of the three?
That is correct.
Oh, okay.
It's built in as a three-part option.
And then there seemed like there was one other component to that. Oh, the device. We don't have to take a phone if we don't want one, right?
Correct.
Okay. We can just stick with our old iPad. And
if you're comfortable with what you have, it's working for you, then that's perfectly fine. This is just making sure everyone has access to technology.
And I would be remiss if I didn't acknowledge the help of Brian and IT in just keeping me rolling along. So pass that on. He's gone. I'll move approval of the revisions to the board policy.
Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Okay. And I just wanted to point out one thing that the public is often confused about. I know with our how we're rolling in compensation for this, but it is a I often hear from people indicating that we get free, we're paid a stipend and we get our health care paid for. And we pay the same as any other employee, and our stipend does not cover what we pay for our health care. So just to make that clear out there, that is something I frequently hear, that's a perk, and it's no more of a perk than it is for, it's wonderful health care, but we pay for it the same as any other employee. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 6-0, one absence.
Madam Chair, can we do a real quick five minute break? Or
if
do you want to try
quick,
to put
we just,
it? Yes.
All we have left is action consent.
All
yes.
Right. Okay.
Can we make
so that's
it?
A no.
Well, can we make it just through our last item? Do you think you can? Yeah. And okay. Action consent 11.01, approval of certificated and classified personnel items.
11.02, disposition of surplus property. 11.03, acceptance of donations. 11.04, approval of furniture and equipment requests. 11.05, approval of purchase orders. 11.06, approval of warrants and payroll. 11.07, approval of quarterly report on uniform complaint filings, Williams Settlement. 11.08, approval of international student exchange programs. So I would entertain a motion on 11. Oh, I'm sorry. Anyone from the public wishing to address any of these? Just trying to speed it up, Chris. 11.01 through 11.05 and 11.07 and 11.08.
I'll move approval of 11.01 through 11.05 and 11.07 and 11.08.
I'll second it.
All right. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carries 6-0. Mr. Buckman.
Yes, thank you. On the approval of warrants and payroll, I don't necessarily need an answer tonight. That's one way to avoid it. Okay, so what I'm looking at is within the doc. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought Ryan was trying to avoid the. Oh. And now. Okay, so there was just a real short point. Payroll warrants are issued to the district employees on the 10th and last of each month. Actual mid-month, end-of-month payrolls for the month of March are included. There was a discrepancy between the two sections within their certificated employees. We increased between the two last payrolls over 100 employees and certificated, according to what I read. Classified went up 200. And the amount paid went up at almost $2 million. So at some point, if I could get clarification on that, I would appreciate.
So there's two parts. So the payroll for the March 10th is kind of the mid-month. So a lot of times that's people that are timesheeted. So that's going to really vary mid-month. You know, if we have a big PD, people go to it. So there could be a lot of teachers, PDs. There could be not as many. So that's why the mid-month one would vary. In terms of the overall payroll, is that where you're seeing the discrepancy at the bottom?
Yeah.
So the 491, 429 employees? And did that vary from last month? Is that what you're saying?
I don't know that varied from last month. The only information I had was these two. So there was
okay.
564 employees on one of the payrolls and 920.
Yeah, so and that would be because the 564, not everyone does the monthly time, you know, not everyone would have a monthly timesheet.
Okay.
So that's why that would... You know, in particular, that one would vary compared to the 920 is everybody on payroll who gets paid.
Thank you. I'd like to move approval of 11.06.
I'll second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, carries 6-0, one absence. All right. Action on that's not it. So we're ready for board reports. Anyone has anything? Oh, no, I'm sorry. Advanced agenda. Mr. Unger.
Yeah, I would like to get some information or just have some thoughts about Mrs. Neuhauer's suggestion about supporting our second language learners through the adult school. And I saw some heads shaking over here when we were talking about that. So if with the board's approval, I'd like to get some information on that.
I'd support that.
Okay.
Mr. Unger, would you prefer that in Friday update, or would you like that as a? Are you proposing an advanced agenda topic?
I'd be happy with it as a Friday update, but I think it would be good to have it with the Ed Services report, since it was brought up in public by Mrs. Neuhauer. I think it'd be good to report it out in the public as well.
Okay.
Mr. Buckman, then Ms. Eisendrath Rogers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've been doing some reading, and one of the things I've read recently is there's a trend across the country to add the naturalization test, which I find an interesting word, which is really the citizenship test, as a graduation requirement and or as a civics class requirement. So I'd like to just suggest if we're, as long as we're doing a study session later on graduation requirements, if there's any interest among the board, I would just be interested to know any benefits, or that just seems like good civics to me.
Is that a Friday note?
Would you like, Mr. Bruckman, would you would you like that in a Friday focus, or would you like that as an update in Ed Services?
You know, I think a Friday focus at this point would be good because we're going to be going into that study session on graduation requirements. So anything we get in advance of that study session,
okay.
I think would be the place.
Okay.
Thanks.
I can do that.
Oh, okay. Well, why don't you take it away with the board reports?
I'll make it really fast, though, and especially since Mr. Robinette already spoke to this one. But it is always a pleasure to judge the TEACH innovation competition because, as he said, we get to give everyone a prize. And so, you know, our toughest decision is whether it's the most innovative or the most revolutionary. So everyone walks away with a prize for that. But mainly I wanted to thank Mr. Crabb for being the person who brought this to us years ago. And even advance of the STEAM initiative, I think, because he's been doing this in his classroom for many, many years. So I want to make a particular shout out to Mr. Crabb. And then also want to thank Mr. Marinello for hosting me on my board walk at Pacific Beach High School and talking to me about the use of Chromebooks by both the staff and the students and the expansion of his life sciences program and the ag business now they have out in the field. And just for being an all-round good guy. Oh, and also at the open house, doing the submersibles in the swimming pool was quite fun.
Mr. Buckman and Mr. Unger?
Just real quickly, it's my understanding that we had a student, again, this is from one of the newsletters, and I love getting them, Kaylee Beardsley, sent in an audition tape on December 10th to perform in the Honors Performance Series at Carnegie Hall. She will be going and singing on, it looks like June 24th through June 27th in New York at Carnegie Hall. So the kids here are great, teachers are great. Real short, I did attend on behalf of the board, the Tri-County Education Coalition. Jack O'Connell was a speaker. He gave us a fairly candid impression was of the governor and his budget priorities, which are the water situation and the high-speed train. And his thought was, well, maybe he's just sort of hiding an attempt not to focus on the school budget. So no judgment on that.
I missed the Fridays. I'll make it quick, Jim. I missed the Friday. I missed the study session because I was attending the NSBA conference in Nashville. It was quite exciting. It was fun to go to Nashville, learned some new stuff, saw some cool things, heard some great speakers. I attended an CSBA adequacy committee meeting, and the discussion is, what is adequate funding for schools? What do we do about that? And what's the relationship? What do we do about our continuing Robles versus Wong lawsuit to try to get adequacy for public schools in California? It was a great meeting. And then this was something I shared with Dr. Prater. We did have our board of directors meeting, and one of the things we heard from was a speaker from the Department of Education talking about the Smarter Balance Assessment. One of the questions that came up was, well, when parents get the new reports from the Smarter Balance Assessment, they are going to look very different from what parents are used to. And they will, in effect, talk about the student's achievement and movement toward the standards. So achieve the standards, close to achieving the standards, not achieving the standards. There was a great deal of concern about how parents would react to that, as well there should be. It was my suggestion, and it was well received, that really school districts look at revising their report cards to making them standards-based report cards so that parents can understand what it is they'll be getting, where their children are actually performing, and so when the state tests come out, it will not be a surprise. Oh, one other thing I want to say about the NSBA convention, I was able to get NSBA to add a section in their idea advocacy to put a reasonable cap on lawyers' fee, on plaintiffs' lawyers' fees for special education. So hope, you know, maybe there'll be some movement on that. And then the last thing I want to do is I want to pay tribute to Lanny Colston, who was a teacher at Monarch Grove Elementary School. I believe he's a teacher on the coast. Lanny passed away on Saturday after a very long illness. His wife, Jana, was a teacher for our district. She's also a retired teacher. His daughter went to school with Casey, and it's just a sad time, and we just want to wish the best for the family.
Thank you. Mr. Quesenberg.
And I want to echo your sentiments about Lanny Colston, just a fabulous person and a fabulous teacher. Just a quick note that Los Osos Rotary had its scholarship dinner this past Friday. It was well attended, and the money from that dinner will be used for the scholarships for the Morro Bay students or any Los Osos student attending any of the schools in San Luis Coastal. So it was very successful. Great meal. And good company.
How much money do they give, Jim?
Actually, Mr. Robinette, can you give me a ballpark figure? Somewhere around...
Ballparks. I haven't added it all up. I'm 25. The treasurer of the club. I think we probably pulled in over $3,000 gross was more than that, but towards scholarships, probably a little over $3,000.
Yeah. Thank you.
Tomorrow night at 6 o'clock at the Palm, Will Jones, former principal of San Luis Obispo High School, will be reading from his recently published book of poetry. It is a free event, and anyone interested should attend. Were you done?
Yes.
Okay. With that, our next meeting is on April 17th at 2 p.m., Measure D study session in B3. And April 21st in our next regularly scheduled board meeting right here.
It's at Los Osos on the 21st.
It's at Los Osos
on the 21st.
Okay.
It's at Loms.
Okay. Very good. Thank you.